And so I don't have a way to predict the future. I just think that we have to go into this eyes wide open.
The head of the U.S. Pacific Command says North Korea remains the main threat to the Asia-Pacific region. It's Friday, March 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, we mark 50 years since the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. The UN forms a special panel to monitor North Korea. And how are Syrian refugees faring in Australia? That's all on today's VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. The head of the U.S. Pacific Command says that the United States has no plans for a limited attack on North Korea, but expressed doubts about the outcome of a proposed meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Admiral Harry Harris told the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee Thursday that while what he called a range of options are being developed, he knows of no plans for a so-called bloody nose preemptive strike.
We have no bloody nose strategy. I don't know what that is. The press have run with it. I'm charged with developing for the National Command Authority a range of options through the spectrum of violence. And I'm ready to execute whatever the President and the National Command Authority directs me to do. But a bloody nose strategy is not contemplated.
Last week, President Donald Trump announced plans for a summit with Kim Jong-un, tentatively scheduled for some time in May. It would be the first such meeting between a sitting U.S. president and the leader of North Korea. Admiral Harris told the Senate committee that he was encouraged by the prospect of a summit, but said North Korea remains the biggest security threat to the East Asia and Pacific region.
We've never been in a position where our president has met with the leader of North Korea ever. And so I don't have a way to predict the future. I just think that we have to go into this eyes wide open.
Admiral Harris said he believes Kim Jong-un wants to reunify the Korean Peninsula under his leadership and is using his nuclear program to gain respect, status, and security. The Trump administration has said it prefers a diplomatic solution to the North Korean crisis, but that all options remain on the table. Admiral Harris also told the committee that China's removal of presidential term limits could see its leader Xi Jinping stay in power for decades and was a harbinger of China's strategic threat to the region. Harris said that China seeks regional hegemony and wants to push the United States out. He said China's development of hypersonic glide weapons and stealth fighter jets pose a significant threat to the U.S. He also expressed concern about Beijing's militarization of islands it has built in the disputed South China Sea and its acquisition of icebreaker ships, even though it has no Arctic border. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Analysts say Trump's tariffs may end up benefiting China. Nepal authorities struggle to identify plane crash survivors. Critics say Indonesian law protects lawmakers from graft probes. Ahead of polls, Malaysia's Najib gives cash to staff of state-linked firm. And the Taliban's studied silence on dialogue raises peace hopes in Pakistan and the U.S. Extended coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Today, March 16th, marks the 50th anniversary of what is known as the My Lai Massacre, when U.S. soldiers on a mission to find and destroy a Viet Cong unit instead attacked a village and killed 504 civilians, most of them women, children, and old men. Pham Thanh Cong was thrown into a family bomb shelter along with his mother and siblings. American soldiers threw grenades into the shelter, killing everyone in Pham's family and leaving him unconscious with head and torso injuries.
Khi mà ẩm tôi lên là mình đầy máu.
When my father picked me up, I was covered in blood, with pieces of flesh and hair of my mother, my siblings were all over my body. My clothes were ripped. I had a lot of injuries on my head and body.
The incident became the most notorious episode in modern U.S. military history, but it was not the only such massacre. U.S. military records describe 300 other such cases of incidents similar to My Lai during the Vietnam War. A special memorial has been dedicated to the victims of the massacre. Relatives and well-wishers place incense on the altars of the shrine. Nguyen Minh Tri is the director of the Cultural Department of Quang Nai Province.
According to Vietnamese tradition, those who pass away should be honored on a family altar. When it comes to the anniversary of their death each year, family members would place incense and offer a meal on their altar. Unfortunately, for the 504 people that were killed in the My Lai massacre on March 16, 1968, they were all buried in mass graves and several families were all killed. That's why we dedicate this shrine to the victims, to honor them.
American Vietnam vet Mike Hasty visited the memorial site.
This is what my country did to the Vietnamese people, and I carry a lot of guilt and a lot of pain because of that. I carry a lot of shame for what my government did.
The U.S. Army would later charge 14 men, including Charlie Company leader Lieutenant William Calley, Captain Ernest Medina, and Colonel Orrin Henderson, with crimes related to the events at My Lai. All were acquitted except for Lieutenant Calley, who was found guilty of premeditated murder for ordering the shootings. He argued that he was only following orders from his commanding officer. Calley was given a life sentence, but his sentence was reduced upon appeal to 20 years and later to 10. He was paroled in 1974. Vietnam and the United States normalized diplomatic relations in 1995, and the U.S. is one of Vietnam's top trading partners. Historian Yung Chung Wook says that the greatest outcome of the massacre is that both nations have learned their lessons.
As we organize the 50th anniversary for the crimes committed by the U.S. Army in Son My, not very far from there, a U.S. aircraft carrier docks in Da Nang for a friendly visit. The war has ended and both nations have learned its lessons. The greatest outcome of the lessons is for two nations to come close together in friendliness and share responsibilities.
For My Lai survivor Pham Thanh Cong, there is sadness, but not bitterness.
I'm ready to forgive them and move on from the past. And I want them to do good deeds to make up for what they did. I don't want to think heavily about it or hold on to hatred. Let bygones be bygones.
To see a special photo collection on the My Lai Memorial, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's spokesman told a news conference Thursday the Philippines is withdrawing from the ratification of a treaty that created the International Criminal Court. Duterte is facing a possible complaint at the ICC over thousands of suspects killed in his anti-drug crackdown. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights reports it is making progress in setting up a new system to monitor and document human rights violations in North Korea, particularly those that may amount to crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office says it is moving ahead with the so-called Accountability Project for the DPRK, which was mandated last year by the UN Human Rights Council. The project calls for establishing a central data bank where information and evidence of human rights abuse in North Korea can be stored. Deputy High Commissioner Kate Gilmore, who has updated the Council on progress, says a high-level expert to lead the project has been appointed, and hiring is underway for 4 more staff members who will be based in Seoul and Geneva. She says work has begun on the electronic repository, the first independent and comprehensive information system on human rights violations committed in North Korea.
It will bring together a wealth of information from a wide range of actors. It will be publicly available, allowing for comprehensive and annotated searching. And this tool will facilitate the building of cases that eventually could be used for the purposes of criminal prosecution.
Gilmore says she hopes the recent thaw in relations between North and South Korea during the Winter Olympics will open other channels for serious discussions with North Korean authorities regarding human rights concerns. She says an ultimate aim is to provide justice for the victims. North Korea has not given its reaction to the UN project. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, we'll hear how Syrian refugees are faring in Australia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Happening now in Asia, North Korea's foreign minister arrived in Sweden Thursday, a surprise move that could be a first step toward a meeting in the Scandinavian country between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Ri Yong-ho landed in Stockholm, where he'll meet Sweden's foreign minister. And stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. International resettlement experts from 7 countries met in Sydney this week to look at ways to help millions of people displaced by the war in Syria. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the summit will also release the first results of a research project looking at how 12,000 refugees from the conflict have adapted to life in Australia.
A study funded by the Australian Research Council has tracked the lives of 200 Syrian and Iraqi families who've been resettled in the state of Queensland. They were part of an emergency intake of refugees from the Syrian crisis and arrived in Australia in 2016 and 2017. The survey found that while most were happy to forge new lives in Australia, there was deep frustration at the lack of employment. Jock Collins, a professor of social economics at the University of Technology Sydney Business School, was part of the research team.
There is a frustration about work. They're very highly educated people, dentists, sort of pharmacists, engineers, major positions in multinational corporations. So very, very sort of strong achievements in a professional life. They're anxious to get going here and they find they haven't been able to do that. There's a frustration about that. Basically, the key point is that getting a job is difficult but critical.
Typically, refugees in Australia suffer disproportionately high rates of unemployment. The University of Technology Sydney estimates that only about 17% of recently arrived refugees in Australia are working. Community leaders worry that those statistics can influence the way the broader Australian community considers refugees. Atem Atem, a Sudanese community leader who arrived in Australia in 2002, is a university graduate. He attended the Sydney Resettlement Summit and believes high rates of unemployment can stir negative perceptions of those fleeing persecution.
If you are someone who lives in the suburbs and who has never met a refugee and you just hear refugee stories, which is the majority of the population, then you think that we shouldn't have refugees because they're hopeless. Those are the stories that you hear in the media. And a lot of people who just get information from the media, which is the majority of the Australian population, believe that refugees are not good for Australia, that they are not contributing.
Australia typically grants refugee visas to about 14,000 people each year through official humanitarian programs. Asylum seekers who arrive by boat have been detained in offshore camps run by Australia in the South Pacific. They've been told they'll never be allowed to resettle in Australia under a strict policy designed to stop asylum seekers risking their lives at sea. Critics of the policy say it's inhumane and breaches international law. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A Cambodian court held a one-day trial on Thursday of a 31-year-old British man who was among a group of foreigners arrested for allegedly posting photos on social media of sexually suggestive dancing at a party. The judge in Siem Reap Provincial Court said the verdict in the case against Daniel Jones would be announced later. Jones has been charged with producing pornography. He was among 10 Westerners arrested in late January for posting the photos at the Angkor Wat Temple area, which is sacred to Cambodians. He faces up to 1 year in prison. The other 9 people were released on bail and deported last month. A court spokesman said Thursday that charges against them have been dropped. This news from VOA Asia. More than 100 members of the Uyghur Muslim ethnic group held a demonstration outside the United Nations Thursday to protest a sweeping Chinese surveillance and security campaign that has sent thousands of their people into detention and political indoctrination centers. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Tossing swimmers and boaters a lifeline when they get into trouble in the water has taken on a new meaning. That's because the lifeline is now attached to a robot. As Faith Lapidus explains, researchers are hoping that a water drone named Emily will help save lives worldwide.
This is Emily, the Emergency Integrated Life-Saving Lanyard. It's a jet-powered water rescue robot used by lifeguards around the world.
The couple of things they use Emily for is that you throw it in the water and you can run out to a person with a line, all right? So you can pull them off the rocks. You can also, you know, run that boat out to them and they can hang on.
With support from the National Science Foundation, computer scientist Robin Murphy and a team from Texas A&M University are creating new software tools designed to make this robot and others a whole lot smarter.
We typically don't build the robots, we add to them.
To do it, she picks the brains of the best lifeguards in the business. Today, Murphy and her team are getting feedback from the lifeguards on some new Emily upgrades designed to help it steer itself more autonomously. They're testing out a new user interface, navigating using thermal sensors to locate people in the water, and fine-tuning a system that automatically slows the robot down as it approaches its target.
You want that robot boat not to just blindly zoom over there and run the victim down, but now use artificial intelligence to slow down.
They're customizing these new programs for large-scale water rescues. Imagine a capsized ferry or water taxi. Murphy's team developed their upgrade plans during field research in the Mediterranean, where the Greek Coast Guard used Emily to rescue hundreds of refugees from the water. She says without advances in robot intelligence, tools like Emily will not scale up to handle large disasters.
So now, if we can give them an Emily that they point and say, there, you know, or just get it started over there, or enter in the go that direction, and it can go over there, and they don't have to worry. They know that those group of people look like they're okay. If they can just hang on for a while, we'll get to them. Let me jump in the water and deal with that guy.
Emily is just one example of how smarter robots can save lives. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And to see some video of Emily in action, be sure to visit our website. That's www.voanews.com. Oscar-nominated filmmaker Ava DuVernay is the first woman of color to direct a Disney live-action movie that exceeds a $100 million budget. As VOA's Penelope Pulu tells us, her film A Wrinkle in Time, starring Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Storm Reid, Chris Pine, and Zach Galifianakis, is about a 13-year-old biracial girl who travels through space and time to save her father and offers audiences the message of selflessness and courage.
Where are we?
We heard a cry out in the universe.
My father's alive.
It has been 4 years since Meg's father disappeared. Trying to prove his theory that one can travel through space and time with one's mind power and love, Professor Murray, a theoretical physicist, finally succeeds and walks off into another dimension where he ends up tangled in a dark world.
Your father's trapped by evil energy.
It's too strong for our light.
And the only one who can stop it is you. Be a warrior.
Storm Reid plays young Meg.
She grows throughout the movie, and she, like, becomes noble, and she becomes herself. So she is just strong, and she empowers not only herself, but the people around her.
Mrs. Watsit, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch are three celestial beings who guide Meg as she finds the inner strength to fight evil and save her father.
Can you help us find him?
Reese Witherspoon plays Mrs. Watsit.
Oh, he did? Really?
I think about how few times we get to see young women at the center of big Hollywood movies, but also women of color. And that little girls out there will know that, you know, they see themselves on screen in this real way with this wonderful girl. That anything is possible.
The film is based on a 1962 science fiction novel by Madeleine L'Engle with a theme that explores the conflict between good and evil. The film uses the same themes to condemn racial discrimination, social exclusion, and bullying. A Wrinkle in Time offers a multiracial cast, mainly of women, with Ava DuVernay, a female director, at the helm. DuVernay describes the main character as an ordinary girl who does extraordinary things and saves the universe.
Trust nothing.
Darling, time for dinner. Are you lost?
We don't have to be on the inside of a box to be a hero. Outsiders can be heroes. People who think and look differently can be heroes.
One of these people is Ava DuVernay herself, a filmmaker who picked up a camera for the first time at 32 and now, an Oscar nominee at 45, took a classic tale and infused it with her personal vision and style.
I think that the particular discipline, organization, and artful eye that Ava brings to the work inspires everybody who's working for her.
Oprah Winfrey supported DuVernay's vision and film production. She also plays Mrs. Witch, the grand dame of the three celestial guardians.
I think it's an incredible time to be a woman in Hollywood. I think it's a time of more acknowledgement, more opportunity than we've ever had. To have Ava DuVernay at the center of this $100 million gigantic Disney production is a watershed moment.
The only thing faster than light is the darkness.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And A Wrinkle in Time earned more than $33 million in its opening weekend. That was enough to finish second behind the top movie, Marvel's Black Panther. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Be sure to let us hear from you. You can log on to the VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the day.